Hey guys, welcome to episode 82 of Scienceology, recording very late in the evening tonight. This is being recorded at 2:25 in the morning on Tuesday, September 22nd, from my newly reorganized room here in my apartment in Astoria, Queens, which I share with a roommate named Bob Biggerstaff, who is a friend and another comedian. And if you're a listener to the show, you already know that. But anyway, so the podcast is obviously a little bit late this week, and I'll go ahead and do my standard apology for that. But I've been very busy and sort of very occupied in my mind about a lot of different things, and sort of in a weird tense place, just trying to figure out how exactly I feel about what I'm feeling. I'm sure that you guys are familiar with that feeling. I hate to jump right into the heady stuff, but that's kind of what this is about. I wanted to do the podcast yesterday, and I wanted to do it today, but I've been kind of wrestling with a lot of different types of things, and I've been very busy, and also trying to finish a painting, and I went to pick up the prints of my octopus painting, which came out fantastic, and I'm very happy about that, but now I gotta deal with the reality of shipping all of those out and all that stuff, and a lot of, you know, just general weirdness in the world, things that you see walking around that are confusing. Just, we live in a very, very strange time. I don't need to tell you that. You already know that. You live in the same time as me, so it, you know, we can probably skip the pleasantries and what would you call that? The specifics of it, you know? It's like, we get it. Shit's fucked up. And we're all dealing with some stuff. But you know what? My job as a person who puts out a podcast that you listen to is to give you content. And I want to do that. And so I felt that it was very necessary for me to give you guys something, even though I wasn't really on top of the shit at the moment. So I've been meaning to do this for a bit. I was going to do a cross post for an episode from a podcast I did with my friend, fellow comedian John Wessling, who is a very, very funny dude that I know from Houston, Texas, where I started at the Laugh Stop in Houston when I first started doing stand-up at the ripe young age of 21, which is right under 20 years ago right now. It's very strange to think of that. But anyway, John Wessling is a hilarious comedian. He was in the game for, I don't even know how many years before I did, just a handful, you know, but he got a lot done in the amount of time that he had been doing it. He went to Montreal, which is a big deal as a comedian, if you're not familiar with that whole, what do you call it, hierarchy of what matters and what doesn't. He's a very well-respected comedian in the Houston comedy scene, just a real, he's one of the guys that you would always come out of the back room to watch do comedy, and that might be confusing if you don't know sort of the dynamic of how it works, but if you do stand-up, and you have like a home club somewhere, there's usually a place when we used to be able to do live performances and things. I know that's almost becoming a hacky thing to say, because we're going to get back there. Don't worry about it. We will. We're going to get back to normal. We're just in a weird place right now. But I digress. The point is if you are a comedian and you have a home club in any kind of city, there's a thing that happens at like an open mic or shows where it's like there's an area where the comedians hang out, which is not usually where the rest of the audience and the people watching the show are at. You know, there'll be the showroom, and then there's like either a green room or a front bar area or a back bar area. But it's sort of like the place where if you're one of us, then you go hang out there while everybody else is watching the show. And most of the shows that happen in comedy clubs, most of the people that are on stage, the vast majority of the comedians don't watch them, because it's like you've seen it a lot before. Or you like the person and you think they're funny in person, but you don't really like their act because maybe they haven't written anything exciting in a while, or maybe you don't fucking like them, or whatever. It could be anything, but you do like hanging out with comedians. But there's always something that happens when a comedian that you really enjoy and respect goes on stage. Is that little area that you have set aside private where you guys all like hang out, when that clears out to go watch a comic on stage, that's one of the highest compliments that you can receive as a comedian, is because you have the respect of the comedians and they want to watch what you do. And they will break their little isolation moment to go watch you and then come back. And it's really like, it's really one of the best things that you can feel as a comic. And, you know, not to brag, I've been able to feel that feeling before. It's a wonderful feeling to know that you have the respect of your peers. And John Wessling is definitely one of those people that we would always stop our conversation to go watch on stage. He's a great comedian. And that is about the best praise that I could give him, I think, in that way. And also just a super fucking nice guy. And anyway, he had me on his podcast, which is After Later is the name of the podcast. And I highly recommend you check that out. It's really, really great. But just to tell you a couple of more things about John, he was a finalist on Last Comic Standing. He wrote for some roasts. I think he wrote for the Jeff Foxworthy roast on Comedy Central. He did a tour with two other comedians where they went and did 50 shows in all 50 states consecutively, which is a really amazing thing. But he's done all kinds of wonderful stuff. And, yeah, again, he has this great podcast called After Later, which I'm sure you can find on, all the places where you find podcasts. And he had me on his show as a guest, and it was really a wonderful experience. And I was really happy to do it. We had a great talk. We had a great time. And I'm actually going to try to find some of the details of this just so I can tell you a little bit about it before I share it with you. But yeah, so the After Later podcast is his show, and he interviews different comedians primarily, it looks like, from what I can see. And I was on the episode on August 17th of 2020, and we just talked about a lot of different things. Talked about, you know, the coronavirus and my artwork and how I've sort of like dealt with my inability to do stand-up. And, this, you know, just a lot of different things. We talk about life. We talk about all kinds of shit. We had a great conversation and I was really happy to be a part of it. So he gave me the files for that, so that I could put it on my podcast so you guys could listen to it, so you don't have to go seek it out, although I do recommend that you do that because there's great episodes on there. But regardless, that's what this episode is going to be this week, because I've just got a little bit too much going on, plus this is something I've been meaning to do. I'm not copping the fuck out, Paul. It's a thing people are interested in hearing. Conversations with you, talking to other people. Jesus fucking Christ. Anyway, again, overthinking it. This is something I had intended to do anyway, but it works out right now because I don't really have, what the fuck ever. Here is the episode of After Later with me and John Wessling on his podcast, After Later. And I will be back with the standard Scientology episode next week. So I hope that you enjoy it. Please give John a follow. And check out his podcast. And I will speak to you soon. And I'll have my fucking shit hopefully a little bit more together. But in the meantime, check it out. Enjoy it. And as always, do not be afraid. And I will speak to you very soon. And now, enjoy our conversation.
Joining me now on the After Later podcast is amazing comic, amazing artist, one of Houston's prodigal sons who is yet to return, Mr. Paul Odo. How are you, Paul?
Hey, buddy. How are you? I'm good.
I'm happy that you are doing so well in New York, you know, at least on the creative way. I mean, you may not be a multimillionaire successful comedian yet, but
it's one day at a time, you know?
That's yeah, all it is. You're staying afloat. You're staying alive. You're advancing the ball, right?
Always moving.
Your creative output is at an elite pace right now. You got to feel good about that, Paul.
I do feel, you know, I've said this to to several people about the pandemic situation. It's like if I didn't have to worry about my friends and family getting sick, I would easily mark this as one of like the best times I can remember having had, in my adult life. Just like
Do you
it's
ever get
weird.
guilty? Do you ever feel guilty about that? Like,
Oh yeah, like every 15 minutes or so, for sure. Yeah.
I think about that sometimes where I'm like, okay, I'm fucking thriving. This is my natural environment. I'm good
Yeah.
at this. If it wasn't for the hundreds of thousands of people dying, this is kind of
Oh.
how I'd like to live all the time.
I know. I've made the comparison that it feels like we're all kind of taking a it's almost like a collective psychedelic experience that we're all having in this weird way. It's just like a break from the norm, but the norm was annoying to me. You know what I mean? So I'm excited to have something different because I work well in like different paradigms or whatever. So it's like I don't know. The norm to me was like this weird, dumb game that I'm like, I gotta fucking keep just chasing my tail over nonsense and not have a minute to think at all. When it's just like, okay, well, I guess, you find the silver linings to things. Again, I would much rather there not be a pandemic, but at the same time, I'm like, well, dude, I'll make the best lemonade I can out of these lemons. That's all I'm trying to figure with.
No, that I get it. I feel like I want to let's just put a pin in the virus pandemic part of it,
Sure.
right? But and then move at the look how life has changed since then.
Oh
And
yeah.
I wish we could hold on to some of that shit because I don't like the drive that I hear from people about we gotta get back to work. You
Oh,
know,
I know.
like
I know.
it's creepy because it's like you're encouraging part of the problem that is ruining people's lives. You're like, let's get back in
Yeah.
that meat grinder, head first, everybody, just dive into the chipper. We need it. We need the
Yeah.
meat, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think there's a it's to me it's a fear that people have of just anything that's different or chaotic or whatever. It's like, and I get that because this it's safe to do the things that we've always done, or it seems safer. But at the same time, it's like everything that you can see, not everything that you can see around us indicates that it was never really safe. First of all, it's almost like taking that easy job, when you're like, I'm gonna get a business degree and then go and do that instead of pursuing my sculpting career or whatever. And then all of a sudden you do that for 30 years and you get laid off right before you're gonna get your retirement or something. It's like there is no, it's an illusion of safety. It's always that. So it's like if you're gonna throw yourself into anything, it might as well be something that you give a shit about. But that's something that's really hard to explain to people who don't have a high emphasis on happiness, or it seems like childish to try to make that an important thing, like your mental well-being or trying to do something you give a shit about in your life.
Yeah, that's pretty good, Paul, because I think about that. There's people who they're so generations deep just indoctrinated into being a worker bee
Right.
that is what you're supposed to do. That's what the definition of adult life is supposed to be to these people, to
Yeah,
most
exactly.
people that are
Yep.
in the consumer culture of get a job, get a check, get a fucking get your you know get your bennies. You know, work your ass off, get drunk at a BW3,
Right, right.
root for the apportioned teams. You know, I mean, they really just sort of take the soma as given as far as like what the life is supposed to be. And
Yeah.
this has fucked them up. Like they're like, ah, these are the people who have family dying around them, and that's a bummer. But then they'll go off on a tear for a week because their fantasy football fucking is not going to happen this year. And
Yeah, yeah.
that was the one thing that I had and I cared about. I'm like, dude, your uncle died alone about a
Uh-huh.
week ago. You're like, yeah, I know, but he was old. He had comorbidities. He's
Yeah,
fine. You know, he was already dying. Like,
yeah.
wait, hold up. That's so you're fucking so the thing that are like the regular, the little tiny, I don't know, banal is the right word, but just sort of just it's not bad. I don't mean to negatively judge it, but it's fucking candy is what it is.
Yeah. Well, it also just goes to show like how different. How very different we all see the world. It's like the way that so many of us have reacted to this kind of shakeup of the system is like with an optimist, like kind of an optimistic perspective. It's like, well, a lot of good's going to come out of this. Obviously, it's tragic and horrible and you certainly don't mean to minimize that in any way, but it's also like it's an opportunity. You try to see, and I think maybe that also comes from like habitually taking the road less traveled by, I suppose, is when you see something like this shake up, it's like, oh, okay, all right, so the big machine fell down. This might be an opportunity for us to like get our little machine off the ground while that thing's not sucking up all the oxygen or whatever, So it's not necessarily like guaranteed to be a bad thing that there's a different situation, And I think that a lot of people don't see it that way. They look at if this thing is destabilized, that's automatically going to be catastrophe. And it's not. But that's
Well,
sort of like a pessimistic viewpoint in my mind.
I don't think it's necessarily pessimistic or optimistic. I think it's all perspective based because nobody truly sees the big picture outside of their own angle from it, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
Because like if you're strongly invested in that massive machine going and that's your whole fucking thing and you're pot committed to that, well, when it falls down, of course you're not going to be thinking, oh, well, hey, a chance to reinvent the thing and go a different direction. They're kind of tethered by the sinking ship at that point.
Oh yeah, no, I get it. It's one of
And
the
they
like if I was riding high when this happened, I'd be pretty pissed. I'd
Well,
be pretty upset.
I think it distorts and forgive the original use of the word, it retards the idea
For sure.
of people's morality because they're so overly weighted on their own experience from it. I know that sounds stupid,
No, it
but let me see
doesn't.
if I can,
I
like
understand what you're saying. It's like it's the same way somebody explained to me one time. Oh, can you hear me all right?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry, that was me. Whenever a phone call comes in, I have to
Oh, that's okay.
tell them to fuck off, which I enjoy.
Yeah,
It's my
yeah.
pleasure. But
No,
like I got
yeah,
a
go
friend of
ahead.
mine who's a musician, right? He does a lot of like he's like a comic. He's stuck in the gig economy the same way comics are, road comics, right? So he's playing at bars. And this whole thing happened, and now he's just on a complete tear. Like he found a hill to die on, right? He's like, you know what? It's wrong that they made bars close. And it's obvious that he's pissed because it's fucked his life specifically.
Of course.
But now he's fucking William Wallace, and how dare they do this to the bar owners and the hardworking people, and they need to reopen, and it's like we're gonna march on the goddamn Capitol and all this stuff. It's like people start thinking that their own suffering outweighs thousands of others. Like there's a health concern, man. That's what you got to remember when this shit is like, oh, I can't go back to my normal life because that would fucking kill people.
Oh, I
How many
know.
people does it fucking How many people before you finally go, okay, I get it. I get it. I can't eat steak this month because if I do, 200 people die. Okay.
Absolutely.
There was
And
an,
it
oh
is,
yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
it's a like a, no, I feel like it's your own pain out, it throws off your empathy. It's like it does, you don't really understand because you don't have the luxury to understand. You don't have the opportunity to kind of like take the time because you're so overwhelmed with the panic of what's going to happen to me, which to me speaks more about like the whole as opposed to the circumstance. Like I mean, I'm in New York, and the situation as it unfolded here in New York was, like people take it pretty seriously just because we're stacked on top of each other and shit. And it kind of happened here first. It was like the first wave, it seemed like. And also the city takes it very seriously, So it's like you go to places and I can get like a COVID test for free anywhere. There's there if the cops are telling you to not be on the bus with a mask, if you got to have a mask on to be on the subway or the bus, they'll give you one. It's like it's and they did that initially just 'cause they're like, we got to just make this easy as possible. And it was pretty simple to get unemployment for the most part. I mean, I know it's been fucked everywhere, but like there wasn't a lot of, well, tough titty kind of attitude. And I see that in a lot of other places that are just like, well, it's, you're just gonna have to figure it out. So when I see people, and it's really hard to like skate the line of not getting political about this type of thing, but it's like
Yeah, I know.
when you go down to like places, for instance, Houston, where it's more just like, hey, well,
I don't see a lot of this around me all the time. So you can, you know, like not everybody, I mean, now it's different, obviously, but when it was, yeah, it was just kind of a rumor that's like, I don't even know anybody that has this shit and they're closing bars and restaurants and stuff. It's like, that's, it's so much harder to be like, well, you guys are stupid for staying closed. You know what I mean? It's like, I can judge it from up here because I've seen it all. But down there, it's like this, it's just out of sight, out of mind, I guess. And it's so, it's so, it's just a very, I don't know, man. It's a big problem. And I'm,
I guess the detachment of what you said, out of sight, out of mind, is the problem.
Yeah.
That's the fucking problem. Like, I don't need to see the other people dying.
Yeah.
To believe that it actually fucking happens.
Right.
You know? Which
right.
is crazy because in so many other ways in my life, I'm a very visual person. Like, a, like the way I lose things, like if I don't see it constantly, I forget that I have it. Like,
yep.
So in other way, in my personal life, I have that problem. But it seems like in a bigger societal angle, I get it. Right.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like I, who's suffering more than fucking traveling, working comedians right now? Every piece of my job, every piece of my fucking income is canceled.
Yeah.
Specifically, like it's weird. It's almost personal. Like, I feel like this is the comedy virus. It just came after everything we need to do to thrive and survive.
Man.
But I'm not going to go fucking march on the Capitol for the right for them to open the comedy clubs back up because I do a show. They filled that fucking place full.
Right.
And then there's a dozen people who get sick and die. I'm the one attached to the flyer. I'm going to take a fucking beating.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You see what happened to the guys that did that shit in San Antonio.
I know. And I kind of feel like they're like the energy is misplaced. Also, it's like you should be raising a bunch of hell, but it should be to like, why don't we have immediate free testing? Why the fuck? Yeah. Why the fuck doesn't every single person have like a little thing that they're carrying around with them that they can get tested with right now? Like, just so we can get back to doing something a little bit more normal, because it's like a step process, you know, we don't have a cure and God knows if there will be a vaccine at any point, hopefully. But at the same time, it's like, there's no reason that you should be able to pick up a COVID test like fucking condoms at the goddamn, like, you know, Planned Parenthood, just in a bowl, just grab one and go. Like, they should be everywhere. You should not be able to fucking walk around without having access to like as rapid a testing as we can possibly get. So we all know it's the, and that's that one has been like boggling my mind since the beginning. It's like, why aren't we just taking this one thing at a time? You know, it's like, just get that done. Then we at least know what the hell we're dealing with. And then we'll keep moving. Because if you had testing, if you had like really good testing and really fast testing, it's like, yeah, we probably could have certain like group things going on.
You know exactly who needed to be quarantined instead of shutting down everybody. You just, all right, well, when you pop, you go you go hide in your room for 2 weeks or try not to die,
right?
You know.
Yeah.
I'm almost what pisses me off, and I just, what makes me want to yell at people is, how about this? How about we absolutely totally shut everything the fuck down for 2 months and then we're done,
right?
As opposed to this half dragged out, half closed, and most people don't fucking pay attention anyway for months and months and months. I guess in that way, that's aligned with my self-interest.
For sure. You know?
Yeah, I'd rather, let's just close everything the fuck down for a short amount of time until, I mean, you ever play that like balloon volleyball where it's like really like with a little balloon where you're just trying to keep the balloon in the air all slow? Sure,
yeah.
This fucking virus is the balloon. And if everyone left the room for 2 to 4 months, it would fall and die and go away. It doesn't lay dormant. There's not like big fucking mushrooms that spoot that shit out in the air everywhere.
Yeah.
It's only in the air because we keep fucking keeping it in the air and giving it to each other.
Yeah, right. It reminds me of the, you know, the way they can't ever really shut down I-10 to fix it completely. You know, it's like, it's just things, there's roads that are so traveled that it's really, really tricky to shut it all down. It's so hard. Mm. It's like all the, I think about that, like the first time I went to LA and, you know, you really get to see the reality that is the traffic there. And you're like, you're like, oh, so this is like a force of nature. This is a real thing.
You're right.
And then you look at how dumb the roads are. They're just like tiny. And it's the same type of thing. They're like, well, we can't shut them all down and totally redo them because there's too many fucking people. So it's such a weird problem of like, how do you turn it off when some people can't not, you know, do it.
Yeah.
It's just a weird juggling act. And yeah, I'm hoping we're getting close to some answer. But
we'll see.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a step forward, two steps back. I mean, goddamn, every now and then I see a development that gives me encouragement. I'm just like, just wait for it. By the next commercial break, there'll be something that takes away all your hope.
Right,
And in an avenue you didn't think was available. Like, right. Oh, shit. Oh, God damn. So now they've canceled Sesame Street. Yeah. Fuck, I loved it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, oh, wait, who's a rapist? Holy shit, I knew that. Oh, God damn.
Do we all just need to sit down and wait for Elon Musk to figure this out after he's done every other goddamn thing?
Oh, shit. You know, what happened to Richard Branson? He was the fucking Elon Musk of the 90s. And
he's kiteboarding. He's kiteboarding.
Yeah, exactly. He went on vacation and never came back. And we're like, hey, dude, you were supposed to be that guy.
Yeah, man. I know. Well, you know, I guess everybody has the dream that they might be rich enough to just get away from everything in that way.
I would do it too. I tell you, because that's really what happened. If you think about Richard Branson, like you said, he's kiteboarding now. So yeah. He was working his ass off 90 to 120 hours a week, genius mode, fully actualized,
right?
You know, as they like to say. And then he went on an island vacation, started kiteboarding.
Yeah.
He's like, nope, sorry, can't turn the engine back on. So right. Now he's like, I'm just going to do cruise ships.
Yeah.
He's basically turned into an old white dude from Florida who hangs out at Margaritaville.
With a cooler accent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's like, Richard Branson, I was so close to getting cold fusion, mate, but have you ever been to Cabo Wabo? That place is amazing.
Yeah. Me and Barack took the kiteboards out, and he just, you know, he said a couple of things that just made me realize I should appreciate the simple life.
You know, it's funny and odd that we're talking about this because I thought about that. Remember, right when Obama was out and like you said, the pictures of him kiteboarding with Richard Branson.
Yeah.
Like, you'd like to think that that was some sort of fun thing that they were doing. But at some point they sat down like a couple of Bond villains and talked about some serious shit.
Right. Yeah.
But it's entirely possible that not at all. They're just like, you know, the Richard Branson, you think he's going to sit there and have some sort of deep TED Talk extreme kind of fucking insights.
Right.
But he was probably just talking shit, like just talking about fishing. And isn't it great to not give a fuck anymore?
Yeah, yeah. We don't need to deal with all this Illuminati business. Let's just enjoy the piña coladas. Yeah.
That's right. Oh, God. That's fucking... another thing I saw the other day, and it tickled me because I think it's how I thought, but never really put it together, about how people search for conspiracy theories.
Oh my God, yeah.
And they want to believe that there's these massive cabals and the Illuminati and blah, 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 blah.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's actually more comforting. It's more comforting to think that there's massive secret organizations who are controlling and running things.
Yes. Like
things are being run.
It is strange to think that, yeah.
Yeah, but in reality... what's more likely is that we are completely on our own. That no one is controlling shit. That everything that's happening, all the global systems are somehow just being propped up on fucking accident.
Yep.
You know what I mean? That there is no driving force and that we're completely fucked up. I know I'll fuck up the quote, but it was some writer said it, that America is rudderless. Or not America, but the world is rudderless.
Right.
We are. We're just a rolling fucking bowling ball in the middle of nowhere. And random shit is occurring.
I know. That's what reminds me. I don't know if you paid attention at all to like these UFO release, like the, all the shit like all of a sudden, there's aliens. We don't know. So that mm-hmm. whole thing, I will give it to them. If that is something that's like real. I mean, I haven't really looked into it. I guess I don't see why they would lie about aliens being real. You know, it seems much more the opposite.
Yeah,
but,
right.
But for the just for the idea that they've kept that secret for this long, that's impressive.
That is.
I wouldn't have guessed they'd be able to be honest.
You'd think after the X-Files was such a hit.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That would have, but maybe that's the slow path we've been on since then, that these things finally come out. I'd love that. I mean, honestly, I wish there was some sort of way for us to, on a personal level, contact the aliens. Like, mm-hmm. why do we need to go through governments and air forces to talk to these fucking people?
Yeah, right. I mean, can you imagine how frustrated they are, like, with us just trying to get through to unemployment, and they're just like, It's like, are these the people that are running this planet? These fucking dipshits? It's like, I gotta press a bunch of buttons every time I try to call. It's like, we're trying to give you the cure for cancer, cocksuckers. Just fucking put us through to somebody who, let me talk to The Rock. Let me talk to that.
You know, if they've been observing us, that'll be great. Like, we don't have to worry about one of our elected officials ruining the meeting. Because if they've been watching us long enough, when they show up, they'll tell us who our leader is.
Right. Yeah. And it'll be some guy that we've never even heard of.
It's like, it'll be a dentist from Kansas City, The Rock, Dwayne Johnson, as you mentioned earlier.
Yeah.
Probably a soccer player.
Right.
I think a popular soccer player would probably unite a lot of the world if he was there, you know.
And just like, some bartender that everybody likes. They're like, this guy always gives good advice.
A six-year-old girl.
Yep.
Yeah. Right, from
the middle of Tanzania. Asia. Or something.
Yeah, exactly. Like they scoop her up first. Like we're putting the band together.
Yeah.
And you're one of the people we want to talk to and give the magic.
Yeah. Be the real Armageddon like movie.
Yeah.
With the whole fucking sequence. Yeah. Oh man.
But it's funny how ridiculous is it that 2020 has fucked us in a way emotionally and mentally to where, dude. That's like highly likely, and people are like rooting for it. Like the idea of an alien invasion or aliens showing up, if you go back to like 2010, would have scared the shit out of people. Oh my god, but now we're like, I'm cool with it. I'm gonna let this play out.
Yeah, let's see what else can happen, because
it's fucking nuts.
It's so insane now, and insane to the point of being repetitive and annoying. You know, it's like, let's just keep going, double down, something weirder.
Yeah,
yeah, where's all the big feet? Get them out.
I know. Like, I want, dude, that would be so great. Is just sort of a unified happening.
Yeah.
Where you're looking in every direction for every possible thing. What if it's all of them at once? Like, it's just basically like the end of a play.
Right.
Like an end of, like the end of Hamilton, when they bring people out and they're doing the introductions, and here was this and that was them, and behind the curtain, remember them, and they died in the first act, but now they're back.
Yeah.
Like, if you just did that full,
the whole thing. Here comes a, the back of the Loch Ness monster. It's like just coming over the hill. Like, whoa. All right. This is
vampires.
Fun.
You know, oh yeah, I was here the whole time. Wow.
A lot of this has gotten to the point where I had a dream a while back, and I'm really bad about recognizing when I'm having a dream. You know, I've never been able to do the like lucid dreaming thing, and I've always been very jealous of when people say that they can. I almost don't believe that they do. But like I had a dream the other like a few weeks ago. And it was so preposterous. Like, I knew I was in a dream. I was saying, like, there's no way I'm awake right now. In my dream, I was thinking that. And I was saying that to people in the dream. Because I, like, went onto an airplane. It was, like, getting on an airplane. And it was supposed to be this new, like, Southwest plane. And when I walked in, it was, like, the size of a furniture showroom. And there was just couches everywhere. And I was like, this doesn't even structurally make any sense that you could have this much room. And they're like, wait, come upstairs. I was like, there's an upstairs? I was like, yeah. And there's like a balcony that overlooks a pool. I was like, this is a fucking dream. There is no way that I'm not asleep right now. And there was no, and I couldn't shock myself into understanding enough to like enjoy the dream. I just woke up laughing. But that's kind of what it feels like right now with a lot of stuff. It's like, there's no way this is real. There's no way. It's like, how could it be? And if it is, why have I given a shit about anything up till now?
That is hilarious. I love that the fact that you really, you're factoring in aerodynamics in a dream. Like, you couldn't, that doesn't make, there's no way the drag would be too much. The weight is ridiculous.
Absolutely. It was.
And now
was,
there's water. You can't have a fucking pool.
Yeah, you can't even put a pool in the back of a truck. Like, that doesn't even make any sense. When you see it on a limo, you're like, that doesn't work. You ever try to move a fish tank anywhere? That doesn't make sense. Like, you can't do that. I remember, like, yelling at the person in the dream. I was like, what are you even talking about? And, yeah, but that's – I've definitely had moments like that during this year where it's like, no way. No way that's real. Come on.
You know what? That's what broke Richard Branson. That's why he said fuck it and took his billions and went kiteboarding.
Yeah.
Was the I want to have a hot tub in the Virgin Atlantic Plains. Can we do that? Can we
Yeah.
And like, no engineers could ever do it. They couldn't try it. It fucking cracked him. Like, he was like, we can't even get a fish tank. We can't have like a koi pond at the bottom of the first class.
I don't know. You got the money. We could try. Maybe get something on gyroscopes, I guess.
That's just it. They couldn't. They're like, no matter how much money he threw at it, they're like, sorry, once it's more than about a 5-gallon bucket of water, it fucks up your plane and it won't fly.
You got to have ballasts and the whole thing. It just doesn't make any sense.
Have you considered just like flat screens, digital, make it look like it's water?
Right. You know? Just stay on the ground. Yeah, that or too.
Maybe your first class, you could have where it's like a bubble and it's all wide open without, you know, really. I always talk about doing that in planes, right?
Yeah.
Where it's like I think that would horrify you to death. I think that would ruin your lizard brain, would just be like, no!
There are a certain amount of things like that I feel like would activate that sort of like, who is the H.P. Lovecraft level, like terrified by like the scope of something that you lose your mind, you know, like see something so gargantuan and impossible that you just like your brain pops. Yeah,
I think that's a face that you only make at like the horror of your impending death. That the complete
and it's over.
Fuck you up.
Yeah. No, I've actually had, because I'm not a believer in the simulation theory necessarily, but I do firmly believe that this is all kind of maybe a video game that is so real we forgot we were playing it. And the more things get crazy, the more I feel like more people are having that kind of thought, and it's overloading the system in a weird way, to where it's just eventually we're going to kind of recognize our own source code or something. And then it's getting closer to that, whatever it is.
I got a theory about how it started.
Oh yeah, please. I love those.
Oh, you know what? Hold on. Perfect timing. I'm going to share with you my simulation theory.
Please do.
When we come back after this short break.
All right. Good, good cliffhanger.
Nice. Nice. Stay tuned. It won't be long. We'll be right back with more Paul Odo just after this. Welcome back to the After Later podcast. My guest today is Paul Odo, and we are talking about the very existence of life on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think you can really get more, you know, let's get down to it. It only took us 25 minutes to get down to our very nature of existence. This is great. I don't know where we're going to go from here for the next 25. But
I do a lot of mushrooms, so this is pretty standard for me.
Here's my script pitch for when we entered the simulation.
Yeah, okay, good.
It was the Bay of Pigs.
Ah, okay.
The Bay of Pigs actually escalated and resulted in full global thermonuclear war.
Mm.
Right? So we're essentially shocked ghosts. Right? Everyone died at once. We're haunting this Earth.
Yeah.
And ghosts. And we've assumed a digital form that just sort of recreated a storyline that picked up from that moment where the brinksmanship turned out no it didn't happen, and everything magically magically happened the way it was supposed to, and then if you look at it, so that was like what, you know, 63 62, something like that,
sounds right. Yeah,
so when they restarted the simulation at that point, think about what happened. All that 60s shit was free love, fuck it, let's do all the drugs, let's get high, let's have fun. They just threw that at them. Then they had a tumultuous war so that they could get rid of the bad code, the bad programs, the people that weren't taking to it well.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, if you were glitching out, you weren't taking to the simulation, they would basically just ship you off to Vietnam where you could be erased and disappear.
Oh, all right. I like
that. So that was, from our perspective, that's how they were flushing. And then after the 60s, right, so you got the boomers. You've been pumping it. So all your souls that are trapped in the machine at this point are the ones that are the boomers. They were the kids at that time. Right. So they're the ones that would take to it. So they, like I said, they gave them the 60s, peace, love, music went crazy. 70s, cocaine showed up. Now you're horny, you're fucking powerful.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's crazy. But then crime went nuts in the major cities because people are fucking crazy computer codes.
Right.
They're coked out of their gourds, and there's just glitches, and that's how that kind of happened. Then 80s, it got about greed, accumulating wealth. Still had that cocaine around, by the way, in case you want some more of that.
Just not as good.
But see, then the problem is, think about it. That's kind of where culture ended. was like at the end of the 80s, about halfway through the 90s.
Well, it definitely started.
Because now everything's a regurge. Think about how we have everything's a remake.
It's like it started cannibalizing itself. Mm-hmm. And so now everything is like a retro of a retro of a, like it's a bad copy of a bad copy, to where now it's kind of like spinning out of this, like nothing quite makes any sense because we don't know what we were rebooting. Right. So we're like rebooting stuff that was already rebooted too fast. And to me, it's like, I think it's kind of the way, like a friend of mine who I build furniture with is a very, smart dude. He has a really fun mind, and he was trying to explain to me one time, he's like, how he thinks we can go faster than light. And it's the way that you like, so you ever put, this is a weird thing to try to describe secondhand, mm-hmm. but you know how you, if you two like two sprinklers next to each other, when they like come at each other, they have that, like when they intersect, they start spraying faster at the intersection point. And then at some point they get to a place where they cross so much that it launches something faster out of it.
Yeah, I get what you're saying.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like the, it's kind of the idea of the 2 or 3 stage rocket. It gets you to a certain speed, then it boosts you again from that speed.
Right.
It's the double bounce on a trampoline.
That same kind of thing. It seems like that's kind of happening culturally as we're like these weird overlapping time periods are just like hit. And I think that ultimately is what a lot of people think the singularity is going to be, where like technology and culture and all that hits this point of such speed and acceleration that it goes faster than we know what to do with. And then it's like, that's artificial intelligence is the idea, which I'm making a 50-50 bet is either going to kill us or solve all of our problems that we have right now. Mm-hmm. And so that'll be fun to see too.
Here's a scary thought. What if it saves us by killing us?
Yeah. I mean, that's definitely the nihilistic perspective of like, we shouldn't be here in the first place.
I got dark in a hurry. My apologies to the listener who wasn't ready for that.
It's a lot. You know, we've been kind of jumping all over the place. But
I love this kind of conversation. You know what I like about this, Paul, is that this feels like, you know, when you go on a gig on a road trip with somebody, you've just got days in the car.
Mm-hmm.
Is you'll have this kind of conversation interspersed with random 10 minutes of complete fucking silence and then picking right back up in the middle of a sentence, like it was just a comma that lasted, you know, 15 minutes.
Yeah, because you're all just kind of like processing it and looking out mm-hmm. the window and thinking about the mistakes you've made. And like, you know what?
Led to this?
Back to that crazy thought we were having. Yeah, I don't want to think about that shit anymore. I don't want to stare out the window watching America go by.
Me and Tommy Drake do that a lot, and it goes just like this. It starts with something as ridiculous as, did you see that double play in the Astros game last night?
Mm-hmm.
And then you get down to Bigfoot is an interdimensional creature that pops through in and out of our plane of existence like a tourist.
Yeah, just picking and then, that thing up again.
Dude, we drove from Arkansas back to Houston, and we had discussed everything on the very nature of everything. Astrophysics, a unified theory of Egyptians and aliens,
uh-huh.
and goddamn hollow Earth. And we just, it all led to one to another where the last 30 minutes of the drive, matter of fact, I'd say probably the last 45 minutes of the drive, that we were spent.
Yeah.
We were just both mind blown, having to process the fucking 4 dozen dangling what ifs from the conversation, where there was nothing left to do but stare out the fucking window and listen to some classic rock.
Yeah, because you've like completely, you know, that I had that same feeling the first time I ever went to a really great comedy show. Like I had never been to a stand-up show before. It was before I started, obviously, and I don't want to say who the comic was because it doesn't really matter, but the point is we had laughed so hard that me and my friends, who were always rolling around joking with each other, laughing, like on the way home, we didn't have anything to say because we were just like depleted of jokes and like all of our whatever it is, the endorphins in our head were just kind of like run out. And I was like, what a weird feeling of just being like exhausted emotionally. Yeah. And it's a great feeling, but it also is weird to see it happen when you've never seen it happen before. Like, damn, I'm just like tired of being happy for some reason.
It's the end of the day at the theme park effect.
Yeah.
You know, you like you said, the endorphins. It's the your endorphins, all your pheromones. You're spouted out. Yeah. You are like at the end of a massive firework display. You are just the final pop 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 is going off, and it's just a cloud of fucking smoke and sulfur. That's mm-hmm. you just standing like haha, and it's satisfying.
It is.
It's like a workout thing. It's like when they work out. They say this weight to failure, to where you get to where right. you actually can't do it anymore. Right,
you max
it's
out. Just,
yeah, it's the same thing. It's just, I have partied to failure.
Yes. Yeah. And it's weird to, I don't know. It's just such an unusual feeling to do that with that particular emotion, which you feel like you should be able to just have as much of it as you want, you know, like interesting conversations or funny conversations, or like you could even relate that to like, I don't know. I haven't been in this situation, but like having too much sex or something, like it stops meaning anything, you know? I guess the same thing could be said about like eating too much dessert or whatever, where it gets disgusting, you know? If you're just like, oh, this is fucked. I don't want any more pie.
The first piece of cake is divine.
Right.
The second one, decadent. Oh, I can't believe we're doing this. But once you get to the second half of the cake and you're just sort of shame eating it.
Right. Like funnel
cake. Then it's like, this is gross. I am a sick.
Yeah. Like funnel cake. I've never finished a funnel cake in my entire life. Like I've gone to carnivals over the period of my life, and I've always bought like a funnel cake, like one bite and then throw away. Like I have no interest in any more of that. It's just way too sweet. Way too much fun.
It never gets better than the first bite.
No, it's got to be hot and then you just get rid of it. Yeah. But yeah. Yeah. But anyway.
So I'll tell you something jumped out at me when we were talking about the regurgitation of art. And we keep remaking and doing the same things over. Yeah. And our culture is just, it's all cover songs. It's mm-hmm. all remakes, reboots. And I think you even see it in like modern art. The only things that are left are almost like, it's almost like collages where they have to take the trimmings and the byproducts of the culture and sort of fashion new weird abstract shit out of it. Like that's the only things that are coming out new. Like no one's drawing landscapes in a new way anymore.
You know what I mean? Weird. I've seen some amazing stuff lately, but that's just because I've gotten more into it as it's become my means of income now is painting and selling paintings. But I've been looking more into that. Because, you know, what's so strange about the idea that I'm doing this now is, like, before I got into comedy, I was going to school very briefly to go into, to be an artist. I was trying to become I was going to be a computer animator was my goal. And then I saw how, like, annoying and boring that was when you go into, like, the little computer chambers where they're not, I don't know, it's just gross. And then I liked the idea of fine art, but I couldn't, like, accept it or something. It's like it seemed too indulgent. And then I found stand-up, and I loved it. And I was like, all right, well, this is more social, and it's all the cool stuff that I like, plus it activates this creativity. So I fell in love with that, moved to New York after being in Houston, have to go into the service industry to support my stand-up. And I've been doing that for years and years. And then all of a sudden, the COVID thing comes along, knocks out the ability to do stand-up, knocks out the ability to bartend and work in the service industry. So now I'm back to doing art again. Of all the things. So it's like it came around in this weird way to where this is the thing I've fallen back on was my biggest pipe dream. is the oddest thing.
That's fascinating. And it feels, do you ever feel, I don't know if you're a religious person or even can.
I'm agnostic about it.
Okay. Well, perfect then, because I wonder if that ever like makes you, what makes you think something might be a simulation?
Uh-huh.
Is sort of the agnostic, atheistic way of trying to explain the unexplainable that other people use to create religion.
Right.
Which is the same thing. There must be a master programmer. There must be a master designer to it.
Right.
Right. Does it feel like the Truman Show, where they corrected the story to get you back to where you were supposed to be? Or
sort of, yeah. Or I also feel like even if you're not like, let's say you're atheist, which I think is a religion, regardless of what people want to say about it. But like, true. I think that even if you think the world and everything in it and outside of it is chaotic, there's still order in chaos. You know, you still find patterns and rhythms. And that's how I remember hearing this mathematician guy talking about how he was teaching a class, and he gave this assignment to his students. was to flip a coin 100 times and write down your results. And he could tell just by looking at the results if they had done it or if they had lied about it. Because because in true randomness, there's patterns that arise that you can see, like you'll hit heads like 15 times in a row sometimes. Right. And it just like keeps going. So there is definitely an aspect of that, that it's like, maybe it's partially that we're pattern finding creatures, but maybe there is a pattern too, you know? So maybe it is some kind of like, well, this is what needs to happen for me to get to this other thing or to make sense out of all the shit that I've been doing. Or maybe it's just totally random, but I'm just trying to be thankful for it.
That's a good attitude to have, man. That's a good perspective to maintain. Well, your art is amazing. For the listeners, go to your Instagram to see a lot of your art. Paul Odo Art is the Instagram address. And like, okay, here's what I'll say. I like how you have added the dimension of time to your art, because if I was just to go to a gallery and see the amazing painting that you did of the octopus, right, or Kraken, whatever.
Thank you.
Great. And so if I see the finished product without having any of the idea of what went into it, I would still be blown away and I would pay top dollar for it. But that you document so much of the creation of it in detail throughout adds such a dimension to the story. And that to me seems like that seems to be a great use of modern social media connectivity to enrich and increase the value and appreciation of your art.
Thanks, man. Yeah, I started doing that when I was making furniture in the Bronx and then also in Brooklyn. I would do it to kind of bring people along for the ride. And then I didn't realize how much people liked just watching stuff like that. And I got like some great feedback with it. Just people wanting to know what are you making? What are you working on? This is fun. I'm bored. And I'm looking at people showing pictures of their butts, and that gets tiring. You know, it's like, it's like too much dessert on here. I need some meat. but it's the same kind of thing. And then I added the live streaming part of it. So I do a lot of my painting and my artwork live stream so I can interact with people and talk to people. And I did that basically to scratch the itch of like needing some kind of interaction, you know? So it feels like I'm tending a very busy bar or also doing crowd work while I'm, you know, cause I'm just cracking jokes with people and shooting the shit and having a couple of drinks. But it ends up being this thing where a lot of the people who do live stream stuff aren't very social, it seems like. Yeah. And I didn't know that. So I get a lot of really nice feedback from people that are just like, oh, it's great that you like actually answer questions or you talk back when people talk to you. It's like, well, why wouldn't I talk back to people? Do it in like this funny way. It's like, well, I've been doing stand-up for fucking 20 years or whatever, and also tending bar, and those things all kind of overlap. It's all public speaking stuff, but it just so happens to work well together. And then also it is cool, yeah, like you said, to be able to see the whole process, I think is interesting to people because it takes some of the mystery out of it, you know, but it also shows the actual effort that goes into it. So right. I have my biggest problem with doing art, I've never sold it prior to this COVID situation. I've always just given it to people as like wedding presents or something like that. That's like, because it takes me a long time and I don't know how to charge. Like, I don't know what is an appropriate amount of money to charge for some of this shit. But now I can look at it and be like, oh, well, I put this many hours into it. If I want to make my time worthwhile, I just kind of put a flat number on it, just like that. And it also doesn't seem like I'm, you know, just being a liar or something. Right. Because I always associate art with liars, I guess, has always been a problem of mine.
Yeah. Okay. I think we're getting into some psychotherapy areas here.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like you got to be good at bullshitting, you know.
You have to be committed to it. That's always that's what stuck me when you're talking about like art dealers or artists who really create a persona, and you know, which is all it's. There's no difference between popular artists and popular music artists. It's the same thing.
It's or entertainers or whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like
you create a celebrity. You create an image and a mystique, right?
Yep, you're selling yourself.
Like, okay, I was thinking about Picasso because Pablo Picasso boy, they cultivated that, right? And he absolutely was a willing participant in it and just loved it. But he's a human cartoon figure, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Amazing and work, but his personality is almost to be desired. Well, yeah, he was a fucking raging asshole, but that was part of the story. People liked it back then.
Yeah, exactly. And that's the one thing that I don't know, whenever I looked at this path. And I also had the same thing with doing stand-up, too. And I sure look forward to the idea of us all being able to do stand-up again. Like, I miss it like crazy. But it's like, I've always had conflict in my mind about, like, what is a performer supposed to... Who is this person supposed to be? And for some reason, like, thinking that it can't just be who you are. I don't know why. Like, you got to, like, ramp up your personality. But I don't think that's true. Because all the stuff that I've ever enjoyed... watching on stage or like any comics like yourself or any of my other great comedian friends, it's like I love knowing more about you by your stuff that you put on stage. You know, it's like I like vulnerability, and vulnerability is, I think, the thing that people connect with more than anything. It's the thing that I connect with. Like, I can tell when somebody's bullshitting me on stage, or if they take a story and it takes some dumb twist that it's like, oh, you were just like, this was just a misdirect. It's like, ah, fuck you then. You know, it's like, like I want to know about the person and like what they're afraid of and all the other shit like that. And I think that's the stuff that really, I think, when you think about like whatever art might be, not just like two dimensional or sculpture or whatever. It's just like, to me, art is something that it transcends the human. This is going to sound so douchey, but
I love it.
It like transcends the human experience. It's supposed to be like an archetypical concept, and you embody that for a moment in something. It doesn't have to be who you wake up and go to sleep as, but it's like, you know, somebody on stage doing something great, be it a theatrical performance or comedy or singing or whatever. It's like, they hit that thing that like vibrates those weird chakras in you. And you're like, fuck yeah, that's part of that fucking story that we all know exists. And we're just waiting for somebody to say the parts of it that we were waiting for them to say, you know? Yeah. And that's the shit that connects, is like authenticity.
Authentic. If you can fake that, you got it made.
Oh man. Yeah. And I'll take it even if you can.
That moment you're talking about, you can't live at full blast all the time. You would be some sort of weird, transcendent, floating Dr. Manhattan if you were like that, right?
Exactly. Or you just die.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Overload.
You'd just go to the next plane. I think you'd graduate, really.
I feel like somebody like Chris Farley would be a good example of that. It's just like, you can't burn that hot for that that period of time. It's going to take you out.
I thought it was more of a cautionary tale on pharmaceutical drugs, but I see where you're going.
That too. Yeah. I mean, you throw that gas on that fire.
Well, because you keep trying to get back to that moment, that hot moment, and when you were talking about that moment where you hit the right tone on stage, and it works as well. I think it goes back to what you're talking about with the sprinklers. When the sprinklers, it's that energy beyond its.
Beyond its own force. It like, capacity, like you said, the double bounce on the trampoline is a very good example. It's just like, what is it? Like intersecting inertia or some shit, where it's just like that kind of thing that when it hits, it amplifies itself. It becomes this exponential thing that's just like, oh, wow, that went way faster than I thought it could. That's fun. Let's try to do that again, you know, and you're just trying to get back there.
That's the sweet spot you get in creating art. Yes. I like it, dude.
And it's also like the fucking false thing that you chase with, like you said, just to go back to, with drugs or something like that. Like, if you get that through some like artificial means, it kind of like pretends to do that. But in the same way that people will say you can get the same effects of psychedelics by meditating, but who's got the time? You know what I mean? It's like, that kind of shit. So I guess there's always like blurry areas in between.
Well, think about like I think about like athletic glory. Like,
sure.
The what it must feel like when you, the moment of winning a Super Bowl or a World Series or an NBA, right. You know, the hitting of the last thing, that pure euphoric jumping and mass hysteria, partying, like that.
Yeah.
The high that comes off of that is what you try to extend longer than it should.
Right.
And you try to get back to in tiny taste form with drugs, right? Like that's kind of the idea, right? It's the, I want to feel as good as it did when something amazing happened.
Yeah. You're chasing the dragon in that way.
Well, it comes full circle.
Yeah. And trying to, what is it? Maybe, I don't know. It's not false. It's just like, it's you've never had it before. And so you don't value it. I don't know. It's a weird one because some people never quite feel it.
I think about, I don't know if I've even mentioned this before on this podcast, but people are recreationally taking DMT now.
Yeah, I did the 5-MeO DMT, the frog venom.
But okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm concerned about that one. Like, I'm pretty bold when it comes to open-minded experimentation.
Mm-hmm.
But what bothers me about DMT is that that's the death chemical, right?
Right. Yeah.
I'm afraid that if I start taking the death chemical for a high,
mm-hmm.
What happens when I've built up a tolerance to it and I actually die?
Yeah, that's a good question.
I don't want to die in pain painfully.
Right. Like, or to see the white light coming and being like, oh, God, it's one of these trips. Fuck, for real. It's like, this thing again. No, you're actually dying. This is the end of your life. It's like, I know, but I've been here so many times before. It's like, let's just get on with the chimes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
No, or what if your own death doesn't reach the level of like, oh man, this isn't nearly as good as that time that we did that shit at Rogan's Ranch outside of Austin.
Right. You know?
Yeah. I don't want to have I want my death to be the big one, man. I want to feel it like, ah.
Yeah, that's a fine point. I know that I can say that the version that I did, you genuinely do feel like you died. Like, it is a moment where, like, I don't know what it, actually my best way to describe it was like a week or so later, I was actually working at a bar and I was watching the X Games on one of the TVs. And you know that moment when the guy goes up on a dirt bike and goes way up in the air. And right as he's at like the apex of the jump, he like lets go of the bike completely.
Yeah.
Not even touching it at all. And then like grabs it again and lands. It's like, that's what it felt like. It felt like my body was the bike and my brain was the rider and it just detaches. And then you connect again and land again. And part of the thing was like, when you come out of it, you sort of sit up and you're like, I'm alive. It's Christmas morning. I can do anything. Who needs a goose? Let me buy it for you. It's like that kind of shit where you're just like, you're just so thankful because you felt this, because it's euphoric and terrifying. And like, you genuinely feel like you're not a solid object. At least this was my experience. And it made me much more appreciative of a lot of things, but it's not by any means something I would make a habit out of doing. I mean, I think I might do it one more time because I did the frog one and not the like synthetic plant-based one. So the plant-based one is the one that I think Rogan and them are always talking about, which is like much more visual and like crazy. This, the one that I did was like, it like rocks in your like core. Like you feel like it's more of, I think it is more of like a death feeling, where the other one seems more like I'm suddenly standing on the surface of the sun and I don't know what that means, but I'm pretty lucid about it. With the one that I did, it's like you're not, like a brick falls out from the center of your chest and then just collapses down into nothing, and then you're just like this no kind of object rolling down a river folding inside of itself. Like you're just like, I don't fucking know what time bends. It's something else. But
that's crazy.
It's really something else, dude. And it's like I'm thankful that I did it. But it's, again, like I've gone skydiving before, and it gives you the same kind of feeling where you're like, that was something to see. I'm not going to like get a fucking month long pass or anything, but I definitely am like happy to have walked away from it, I think.
Dude, what if we lived in a world where that chemical, you said it was frog?
Was it frog? It's the venom of a Sonoran toad. And they squeeze it out of its like glands on the outside of its body and squeeze it onto a piece of glass. And then they let that dry in the sun and then they scrape it off. And then you smoke it in a glass pipe like crack.
Okay. All right.
So, but in a yoga studio in Brooklyn.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
with an acai smoothie to chase it down.
I had these ladies from Mexico come up and like do it. Was a very like taken seriously type of project, and there was very small group of people. These three Mexican ladies, only one of them spoke English. And what was so fucking weird was when I was really, because they had to give it to me three times for it to actually like launch me. I don't know why. It's just different for different people. And one of the times when I was like halfway in and halfway out, I could hear them talking, and I don't speak Spanish, but I understood 100% of the things that they were saying to each other while they were speaking Spanish. And I didn't even think that was weird until like about the time we were about to leave. I was like, wait a minute. Were you guys speaking in Spanish while I was there underneath? And they're like, yeah, yeah. I repeated what they said to them, not in Spanish, but I was like, did you ask her where the thermos was for the water or whatever? And she's like, yeah, yeah. I was like, there's no reason I should know what that was. And she's like, well, that happens.
That happens.
Yeah. Somebody said they understood Farsi one time like that. And I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to go and I'll leave that up to Mulder and Scully.
I'm gonna go think about that one in the car for the rest of my life.
Yeah,
I'll catch you later.
I'm gonna go try to eat some French fries at a diner. Yeah, that was a weird one, man. That one stuck with me for a while. But yes, your critique on that is something I haven't heard anybody say, and I think that's an accurate thing to be. I don't want to build up a tolerance to dying.
Yeah,
yeah, that's a good point. I would hold on to that and work with that idea, because that actually might be a fun concept for like a script of some kind.
Yeah. Oh, good.
I'm especially good. With like how prevalent that is right now.
Yeah, no shit. Yeah, if you could base any script off of what Rogan talks about, there's definitely a market there.
Yeah, you'll at least be a guest on his show, maybe.
Yeah, right. Knock on wood, buddy.
Yeah.
Well, I've taken up too much of your time here. Let me, Paul, your podcast is really, really good. It's about like this, except it's usually someone else besides me with you.
Well, it's mostly just me talking to myself.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I like that. That's what the first part of my episodes usually are. I talk to myself at first, and then I do an interview, and then it's me talking to myself at the end, trying to digest that shit I just talked about.
Yeah, and I love that type of thing. And it's sometimes it's just good for people to, like, hear other people's inner workings of their head so they don't feel alone or, like, as crazy as they think they might be, you know?
I enjoy it.
Like, we're all kind of nuts.
So your podcast, Scientology.
Yes.
Scientology. I love that. That's inspired. It's inspired. Of course, you can find that anywhere that podcasts are, your Apple, Spotify, that shit, I'm guessing.
Yep.
And you do the live streams of the art often, or is there a project that you're working on right now?
Yeah. Right now I'm doing them live on Reddit every Thursday at 9 o'clock Eastern Standard Time. But I'm gonna start doing it more on like Twitch and some of the other platforms too. I'm still trying to work out the idea of a schedule and how to do that, and I'm very new to the concept of live streaming, so I'm kind of stumbling through it. But I also just bought a and I know we got to wrap this up, but I just got I just bought an Oculus Rift, one of those VR headset things.
Oh, fancy.
And the reason I've been saving up to buy it for a while, and the reason I bought it is because there's a 3D art program in there called Tilt Brush. And I'm trying to figure out a way, because I know you can do this, but I can live stream doing three-dimensional artwork in this thing and also be like chatting with people. And so I can take requests to draw stuff while you're watching it. And what's so amazing about this is like you can turn it all around and scale it. You can draw with light and fire and all these weird different things. It's bonkers. But that's a whole nother thing that I'll let you know about when I'm going to do. But yeah, follow along. And if you're following, you'll see when it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm so impressed, and I think some of the great showmen in history would be impressed that you have actually found a way to be successful at getting people watching paint dry.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly. You know, they've been
calling it gold. What a twist.
Yeah, they've been calling me Bald Ross.
I love it. Well, and I'm sure if you go to paulodo.com, that has like the links you can follow stuff to get to find wherever you're doing all the other things.
That's it. Yeah, it is.
Awesome. Well, let me ask you my final questions, Paul. And I got a feeling since I know you're a carpenter and you make furniture and handcrafted kitchen items and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But if there was no such thing as comedy, if there was no such thing as art or any of the other creative things that you've been doing, if you had to work for a living, if you had to do a trade or some working Joe shit, what would you do to survive?
I think that would be it. That or like building houses. I like the idea of that. Something that's going to like very much change people's lives in a lasting way that like outlasts you. I think that's kind of where I'd like to go with it. And also it's just great to build some stuff with your hands and look at it and see that it's a thing that was there that wasn't there before you came along, you know, right. Like some of the stuff that we've built, me and my business partner and friend Chad in our work here in New York is like, we built some dinner tables and things for people that are going to be like, you know, that'll be passed down to their kids.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a really cool thing. I love stuff like that. So yeah, that would be my answer to that.
It's kind of whenever you're at your most Ron Swanson-ness, when you're discussing a fine piece of wood that you're making a handcrafted spoon out of, you know what I mean?
That's... Yeah. My go-to line with that is, I don't sound like Ron Swanson. Ron Swanson sounds like me. I'm real.
I don't doubt it, brother. I don't doubt it. You know, your old buddy Corbin. You should, when you come down to Houston, let's go hang out at Corbin's house and build a deck. Or
I'm so into it, I can't even tell you.
It seems like every day he's he and Diane are posting pictures of, well, Corbin just went to Home Depot, came back with a trailer, and mm-hmm. Hey, look, now we have a fucking portico. I didn't even know what a portico was, but I think he just built one.
Yeah. Well, now you got one. That's your job to figure out what it is and what to do with it.
Yeah, yeah. I like that. See, I do a little bit of a series on people who work in the trades here on my podcast.
Oh, and, cool.
I've enjoyed getting to talk to people about it because they get it. There's a sense of accomplishment that's primal in nature, right? It's like, right. You know, you're useful with your hands and can turn a pile of shit into something that's needed. That's why I put some stiffness in your spine. Doesn't it?
Yes. And it is also, I think it's at least with me, it's a direct reaction to living in New York City and being like, I want to know how to live in the woods if I need to. Because I like, this is so just like the opposite of that, you know? I remember I was just walking down the street one time, furious that I couldn't catch the bus or the subway. And I'm like, how can I build a house in the woods? What do I use to, what do I use to clean shit? What do they used to use? Vinegar? How do I make vinegar? And I just Googled, how do I make vinegar as I'm walking down the street? And it's like, oh yeah, as long as I can keep a Wi-Fi signal, you could stay alive in the woods for a long time.
Well, you know, maybe that's your future, homesteading, man.
I'm telling you, homestead
with a good Wi-Fi signal and you can just do whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. It'd be like that episode of The Office. I'll cut my pants in half and just die out there immediately.
Dude, I love that idea. Well, this brings me to my final question. I ask everyone about this on After Later. Let's say that things got ultimately way worse and we find ourselves in a Mad Max Walking Dead dystopian nightmare,
mm-hmm.
right? Where our society collapses and you basically just have to go fend for yourself. How would you survive in that scenario? Do you think that you would thrive? And if you found yourself at the gates of the local warlord and you had to prove yourself useful to their community to survive, what job would you do to fit in?
Well, if it's not painting sea creatures or birds, I think it would be some combination of the carpentry type deal. Are there zombies in this situation or no?
It's up to you. It's okay. Up to you.
Well, I think I'd probably try to get out on the water would be my goal. Like I'd probably try to get a boat and some people who know how to work a boat. And I think I'd stay off land as much as possible and just kind of scoot, or just ride the coast.
Oh, did I lose you?
I don't think so. I'm here.
Oh, you're still there. Sorry about
yeah,
that.
Yeah. I think I'd probably try to become more like waterfaring would be my goal.
Are you a sailor? Can you sail?
I can help and I learn quick. Yeah.
There you go. So preparation, yeah. You got to get ready. You got to learn how to sail.
I'm telling you. Yeah. My buddy Chad, the guy I build furniture with, he's got such a history of that. I keep picking his brain about it, but yeah. Right now I think I just probably have to rely on my abilities to twist a phrase and paint a picture. So yeah. And also, you know, I can swing a hammer too. So that works.
That's going to be useful. That's the kind of thing where they're going to, I mean, sure, you'll probably have to split some time. No one has one job in the right. apocalypse. You know what I mean? You have to, it's a gig economy for sure.
Yeah.
So, you know, if you're making furniture, you're fixing walls, you know, shit like that, that's going to keep you busy. But at some point, you're going to grab an AR-15 and defend the fence.
Oh, yeah.
You know, some point,
that's okay too.
So at some point in the future dystopian society, everybody's a sex worker.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Giving or receiving. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to, it's just part of the cost of living, really.
I know. I always think about that in New York City. I'm just like, every one of these buildings was a brothel at one point, it feels like.
I always thought that whenever we were in, and we go to Mexico on the cruise ships, because yeah, it's always like, oh, there's a dentist office. But if you ask, it's also a brothel upstairs. Like, for everything sure is also a brothel, right? Like,
right.
Everything is, it's that and something else. And like, why even the taco, dude, there was a taco truck that everyone knew about that you could, they had great tacos, amazing food. Mm-hmm. And if you wanted to meet his sister, there was a little spot on the other side of the hill. Like,
yeah,
from there, like, holy shit. I'll just doling out the fucking sex in this place.
Full service. Tortas, yeah, and hand jobs.
And that's how we wrapped it up. Torches and hand jobs. I hope that you enjoyed my conversation with John. And I listened to it. I didn't. I forgot that there was a little bit of technical difficulty. I mean, everybody's got to do everything from weird remote locations now. So that's just part of what we're dealing with for the time being. But again, thank you guys for listening. And I hope you enjoyed that. Is a one of these crossover episodes that I do every now and then, and I hope it's something you dug. So thanks for listening to the podcast, guys, and thank you for supporting it. Please rate and review on Apple Podcasts, and thank you, special thank you to my Patreon members. I can't tell you how much that means, and I'm finalizing some designs to try to get some shit for you guys soon. If you want to support the show on Patreon, check out my website, paulotto.com. Scroll down to like about a quarter of the way on the page, and there's a link to my Patreon page there. And yeah, once again, thank you guys for listening, and I will talk to you very soon. Do not be afraid. Paul Otto, Scientology, episode 82, crossover. Now ending.